Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal!
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 Capaccio.
On WGR.
Time for the roundtable. Sal is here. The Friday roundtable on Football Friday here on WGR, brought to you by Arthur Pressman, Western New York's traffic attorney, your ticket to justice.com, by Northwest Bank, increasing the value of you, by Lockport Outdoor Store, high impact gear for hardworking men and women, and by Belknap Heating and Cooling. Go green and save with electric heat pump solutions from Belknap.
I don't know. I know you hate this sort of, when people make this sort of comment. Mike, time is time. It's always finite. It is what it is. It feels like a month since you've been in here. I don't know what the hell. Just one bye week. You get so into the rhythm of the season, mm-hmm. and then there's just one week off, and it's like, what do you mean they've only played five games? To me, they should have played like 11 games or something, and it all it was 1 week off.
Now think about that and put it in terms of. And I know you guys know this, but we try to always tell people how athletes, especially football players, are creatures of habit because it's such a weekly routine. So Sunday, 1 o'clock, Sunday, 1 o'clock, every Tuesday off, every Tuesday off. Wednesday doesn't change. Nothing changes because of what you just said. It was 1 week, and it feels like everything's off kilter, and you're like, wait a minute. It's been a long time. No, it's been 1 week. It messed things up, and that's why football players and coaches love routine and – when I see Sunday 1 o'clock for every game, I'm like, that's actually good for them. Even though people want all these night games, that kind of throws your routine off.
Right. I was having a conversation with somebody about that who made that point, that the Bills are better off. One reason why they're well off this year is that all their games, are except for one, are Sunday at 1 o'clock.
I think it was the guy who called you about gambling. He said that. I remember that maybe, call.
Was it on the air then?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm remembering that.
Yep.
And like you said, I see the schedule, and I see it as a slight and focus on that. But McDermott, for how he is, probably loved it.
Probably, and I'm sure there are players that would rather play at night to be exposed. Like, they want that.
Yeah.
But they are creatures of habit. You don't want to throw off their routine in any way. And as much as they want to do that, as much as they like that, it is something, I think, there is something to be said for always having the same routine. Thanksgiving week is the only time it's going to be different for them.
It's probably one of those things that if you're, and I think a lot of athletes are, like a positive, you choose to be optimistic about everything, so you make the best of every situation. Like, we don't have any night games. Good. Routine. That'll be good for us. Oh, we've got night games. Awesome.
We're
to help with the routine,
TV.
We've got night games. Really fun. My parents will watch or whatever.
That's right. And you know, if they go to the playoffs, let's say, I think that they would prefer a Sunday at 1 o'clock game. I mean, that's what they've done all year, right? Don't give me Saturday at 8 o'clock or Sunday at 4 o'clock. Give me Sunday at 1 o'clock. That's what we've done all year.
I'll tell you right now, if they go to the playoffs, they're either getting Sunday at 1 or Saturday at 4:30, because they are not getting Saturday night, and they are not getting Sunday late. That's 50-50 as I see it.
Uh-huh.
And their playoff odds are better than that, Sal. I mean, what did you think the chances were when the season started, if you can sort of go back to that? That we'd be here right now with them looking like such a favorite to make it, 75%-ish?
I picked them in my predictions column to be the last wild card. I did, and I wrote the reason why was because of the schedule, the way it's set up. I felt they were in that position, but also that the AFC wasn't all that strong, and there were teams there that have tougher schedules that we didn't really know who they were going to be. But more than anything, whether I was right or wrong about that, doesn't matter. What I did say for months is – I believed this team would be playing meaningful games late in December where they could really have control of their own destiny. Not, we're in the hunt on the end of the graphic, let's hope for two other teams to win, and we got to hope a tie over here. Like, literally could be playing week 15 and 16 thinking, hey, if we win 2 out of 3, we're in. I've always thought that that was the case, Mike. They're in a better spot now than even that. If the Raiders and Colts both lose this weekend, the Bills have the first wild card still by 2 clear games. By 2. Now, I mean, like the next, they have one loss. Mm-hmm. If the Raiders and the Colts lose, they would each have 3 losses. The Bills would be in that wild card spot by 2 games over anybody else.
With the schedule they have left.
Right.
I mean, that's going to be tough to topple.
Yeah. I mean, it would be at
also
this
one
point,
of those teams is the Oakland Raiders.
Right.
Yes. And at this point, it would be a collapse and a disappointment if they didn't get in, if that were to happen especially. But even now, it's trending that way where you're like, okay, like if you don't get there, to me, if you told me after 8 weeks, start the season, 8 weeks, what's their record? What's good? What's bad? I would say, you know, if they get to 5-3, I think we're all thinking, hey, good thoughts here. Five and three. I know it's tough yep. schedule coming up.
Yep.
Little slate there. Now it's actually a disappointment if they're not 6-2.
That's right. Because of the way the schedule
That's
works
right.
out. It's Miami and Washington sandwiched around Philadelphia.
Correct. Yep.
So, right. And if you get to 6-2, at, you know, we'll see what Cleveland does here, right?
Yeah.
But after that, it's Cleveland, Miami, albeit both on the road, and then Denver here.
All winnable games.
Right.
What games are they not favored in? Maybe Cleveland? They might, but we don't know what that's going to be like.
Right.
That could be a 2-point game either way.
My guess will be that they're not favored in that game.
I agree.
And Dallas and New England. Maybe not Pittsburgh. What about next week?
Good question. Probably about a pick. I would not be surprised if they're an underdog by a point, point and a half. I also wouldn't be surprised if they're a 3-point favorite giving home field advantage, otherwise even game.
Mm-hmm. So 3 or less, favored by 3 or less.
I would say favored by 3 or less or underdogs by 1.5 or less. I think that's about the window.
Next week's matchup is pretty cool to think about. Like Philadelphia, they're not having a great season, but they have status. Like that would be a game where the Bills, the Bills would result would really mean something. This week it's really just only if it goes badly. You know, like I don't expect to feel any more confident in them or be more impressed with them if by almost any scenario on Sunday. Because like the expectation is that they will win this game handily.
Yes.
But if it goes badly, that would change minds.
No doubt about it. And I don't think I think Mike, no matter what they do this week, no matter how they win, if they were to lose, it might change it the other way. But they couldn't win by a big enough margin to impact what people think about them against Philly, I guess, right?
Right.
They could beat the Dolphins by 7 or 27. I don't think people think any differently about them against the Eagles, saying much better chance to beat the Eagles, feeling better. If they lose to Miami, now you're sour on them against Philly, most likely.
One thing, maybe the number one thing about them that I think is really great, they've gotten right, is pass to run. Their numbers when it comes to play calling.
Mm-hmm.
They are at or near the top of the league. They're not the Chiefs, but they might be next. And there's different, you know, charts or different ways of breaking that down. You can count everything or you can remove certain game situations that would maybe taint it. Whatever way you do it, the Bills, our Bills, are like a pass-happy team. And that's without the bomb. Right? Like they have not done that. They've barely tried it. That has not been a weapon for them really at all this year. And I just think like it's long overdue and I feel like it's important. I think this was an important step for them to take to become good. And so they're doing it. And like, so for you, Sal, how important is it? Is it something where you look at their players or you look at the schedule and think, well, I don't think it's a big factor in the season they're having, but I don't know. Like I kind of think of it as one.
To me, I understand the way the NFL is built and why you want to do it and why it makes sense. But the way their team specifically is, I'm okay with them not having to throw the ball around totally. They need to lean on a defense because they built the defense so strong and they can have a good running game and they have a good running game. So it's fun. It's exciting. It shows me, okay, what are the possibilities? More than anything, it's what are the possibilities? Where can they go if they're going to have this? And forward thinking. I don't need it to happen. I just win the game the way you need to win the game. That's what I've always been about. It doesn't matter. I mean, if you have to win the game by running 40 times and throwing 20, then that's what happens and the win counts. If you can win the game by throwing 40 times and running 20, then you can do that as well. So I don't care, but I'll tell you, the way the team is currently constructed, I actually think it would be kind of negligent to not understand that and say, we have a good defense. We don't have to put our offense in harm's way, mm-hmm. right? I'm actually showing they're 22nd in the league in pass to run, Mike. I don't know if that's the numbers you have. 22nd, 57% total.
Well, I was a little bit vague about like what the categories are because they're like I did say there're different interpretations of it.
Yes.
And I think some situations are left out. Like if they're way ahead, like the Giant game could be this.
Because they've been much more pass heavy in the first half when the game is closer.
Yeah, you take out the last two minutes of the half. You do certain things to get a truer outcome. But
right, that number that they're second to Kansas City in is like adjusted for effects and whatnot.
But that's great. I love to see it, but I don't really care. I don't care. I think we might be different than you. I don't want to speak for you. I know you want to have a pass-happy team, and you want to see teams throw the ball and say, that's the path. What I want is a coaching staff that understands their personnel and says, what's the best way to win the game? That's what I'm going to do, is what the best way to win the game. And it might be because of, well, we constructed our team to be conservative, and that stinks. I don't want that. But if that's who your team is, then that's what you got to do.
It should go hand-in-hand with the strategy. You know, the coaches call the plays and everything, but I want the team to understand this. I guess I will want to give the Bills the benefit of the doubt here because the evidence is there. Mm-hmm. And so that what they're doing is sort of agreed upon and understood organizationally.
Yes.
I mean, that really, part of it is like Allen, and it really doesn't matter anymore what you paid to get Josh Allen, but it's relevant when I think about this, because if you make that kind of an investment in a quarterback, mm-hmm. which you don't have to do, if you do that, then you should, you know, he should really be really in charge of the offense. He should not be like they call a game manager. With this, you know, this statistic, this area, they are not throwing. He has not thrown 40 passes in a game yet. He did once last year and not at all this year. He's in the 30s and maybe one game in the 20s for his five games. So they're not running that many plays. Like the Bills rank low in the league. It's 25th in the league although they've had the bye week. I got to be careful on that because they had the bye week. That's not an average.
Well, I know they didn't have the ball very much in the second half of the Giants game. I think also the Bengals maybe. Like there were a couple games where they were rolling along and then they didn't have the ball that much.
The third quarters have been
tough. The third quarters, right? I know the Patriots, they came out, they came down the field in the third quarter, which was nice.
Right.
But I don't care in any sport really, like the path to victory. To me, it's all about understanding how to beat the other team and doing it that way. Not necessarily thinking it has to be a certain way, just what's the best way to get the result.
It also should be said, if I may, Bulldog, also, that their offense is not really good. Like, I'm giving them credit for what I think is a philosophical thing that may have changed around here. It's not really good, though. Like,
right.
Percentage of drives that end in scores or yards per play. Like, the Bills are drives that ends in score, they're 28th in the league. Like, they're not really a good offense, I would say. Like, they're okay.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you've had turnovers. You've had
the turnovers 11 turnovers have really caused that score, that drive end and score. Because they, the opener, for instance, mm-hmm. I know it sounded weird to say, but I liked their offense in the first half.
Too.
They just turned it over like crazy.
I thought they completely outplayed the Jets in that game.
They moved the ball easily, it seemed. So they do rate pretty favorably in rushing yard, just yards, raw yards. They've moved the ball. They just haven't scored.
Yeah, like when Scott Kaxmar, and I did my Monday show on this, when he tweeted the other day, you know, the number two team in the AFC needed a 16-point comeback, they needed this. I mean, I didn't tweet at him, I like Scott, but I wanted to say, well, they needed it, he's referring to week one, well, they only needed a 16-point comeback because they really screwed themselves when they were dominating the game otherwise.
Right.
And they had the ability to come back because they were the better team, right? I mean, that's what we're talking about here. They have put themselves in a really bad spot a few times by turning the ball over. But otherwise, I think they moved the ball pretty well, efficiently in most cases. Here or there, they haven't. And look, they have several 70-yard drives. They have 9 of them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
For touchdowns.
Like all their touchdown drives have been 70 or even 70
and
yards
or more. So to me, that shows that they have the ability to move the ball in multiple ways because they're not shying away from Allen throwing it for sure.
With all this talk about pass versus run, Singletary being back.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about it, I know, earlier this week, the three of us together. He played, whatever, it was set close to 70% of the snaps in the opener. It seemed like, okay, this is already happening. Mm-hmm. Faster than maybe I even thought it would.
Yep.
He's going to be their running back. And then, of course, he gets hurt in week two and is gone until now. And we expect he'll be back on Sunday. How big a deal? I'm very excited to get someone back that I think is something they've been lacking, which is another dangerous player on the field.
Remember when Brandon Bean said he was the most fun player he watched on his film? I feel that way just about him on the field. He's the most fun guy to watch, right? I'm excited to see him because he's fun. Every time he touches the ball, I love watching him run. I went back and actually watched the Jets and Giants games and some of his runs, and I'm like, he has this vision that is incredible. There's only guys. McCoy had that vision, right? Uh-huh. I mean, he can't do it as much now, but to have that vision, Le'Veon Bell has that, and that patience, I'm excited. I don't know, though, Bulldog, if it's bell cow,
right.
Lots of, how do you divide that up? Because I still think they believe Frank Gore is their number one ball carrier.
Hmm.
I don't want to say number one running back. I think that's a different term because you can put those guys in different situations. But ball carrier, I think Frank Gore, to me, is still number one in their depth chart.
You know, fine. I thought the idea of Frank Gore was just sort of more of the same from the Bills. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can't say that it isn't working out so far. Right? He's been a useful tool. He's been a useful player. I think I am with the running backs don't matter crowd, you know?
Me
like
too.
I just think it almost doesn't mean a lot in a strange, sort of an ironic way because it's such a prominent position historically and they're stars in the league, but I don't know, like if you're not the same everything just by changing out these guys, you know, McCoy was a star and he was flashy and good, but
I wonder if I miss him. I've thought about this, Mike. I'm with you. I agree with you. Everything you said about that. You change these guys in and out. It seems like the value over replacement is nothing really, right? I mean, it's pretty much the same guys, but I think I have seen the impact of not having Devin Singletary and what it means to the ability for the offense to do different things. Like they can't get runs to the outside in those outside zones and even outside the tackles, right? I mean, they can't do that without him other than turning it, handing to a receiver or a tight end for crying out loud, which they did in one game.
Yeah.
So that to me translates, and I'm thinking as a coach here, as a defensive coordinator, I don't have to worry about that as much. And then when that guy comes in the game, it's kind of putting me on alert. So I agree with you as far as the results and the guy running the ball and how much value he has over the next guy. But I do think there's a philosophical point to be made about a guy like Devin Singletary versus TJ Yeldon, for example, or whoever else you put out there, and what he can do to impact the overall game plan of not only you, but the defense playing you.
Yeah, I would recommend throwing on those plays where you don't have Singletary to run outside. You
know, right.
You probably a good play when you pass is worth a lot more than most running plays. Well, you know, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. I mean, in the way we talk football, it's true. It's an easy point that you want to give the defensive coordinator, you want to give the defense, you know, more looks and more weapons.
Things to think
things
about.
You can do that they have to respect.
Yeah, right. And I think that's what he does. So they're playing a very undermanned team this week. This team they're playing is not very talented.
Yes, and we will get to that.
So it might not matter at all this week, what I'm saying. But I do think in the grand scheme, he changes who they are on offense.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. There was a home game. Well, I think maybe while Rex was here. Was it the Browns? There was a team you watched from the sideline, and we're just like, this personnel is just not NFL personnel.
Winless
Browns.
It was
the Browns.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think I remember that. Now that you bring it up, I think I might have said, this is maybe the least talented team I've ever been on a field with.
Right.
This team might trump it. We'll see it. Team might trump it. But that I remember that. That was the Browns. That was the last time they were favored, or not favored. There was something about that stat with the Browns that I saw, and I said, oh, yeah, that was the game where they were awful. That was the RG3 game. Not even Johnny Manziel, I think. That was the RG3 game.
More with Sal Capaccio on our Friday roundtable. After the update, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. This is WGR.
He had one game and one good game, and there's some other pieces of the game within that game, though, that he needs to improve on. And he's a young player that needs to continue to take it one week at a time, one game at a time. And he also has to understand that the more he plays, the more film is going to be out there on him. And so people will have more of an awareness in terms of how to defend him, how to attack him, and so that's where the evolution of a player comes into play. And confident that Duke will continue to grow. And we love his toughness. We love his personality in terms of what he brings, kind of the energy, that dog, if you will, to our football team.
Sean McDermott on Duke Williams. Sal, what do you think his ceiling is as a player, Williams? Like, is he somebody that we're going to come to know real well?
Well, in Buffalo, people do already, but I don't think he becomes like a national household name or anything like that. To me, he's still like kind of he's a good player who can be more of a situational type player. I don't think he's somebody that is going to be relied on all three downs all the time. He also impacts how a defense plays a team because you see Duke Williams on the field, you know he could block for them. A great case is actually, a great point is his touchdown catch, Mike. He was lined up on the outside. He came in a little bit of like a short motion, and I think the Titans thought there was a run because he was coming in tight to the formation. So the corner came up and pressed him, and he just basically swam by him and got the touchdown. I think that's a result of him having the ability to be such a good run blocker that they had to respect that when he was on the field. And I think that's what he brings to the table is he can do different things, and defenses have to kind of treat him knowing that he doesn't have the top-end speed. He's not going to beat you that way. But he can block. He can run good routes. He has good hands, and he can high-point the ball in the end zone.
Do you think in the end, Zay Jones, the lack of effort on the two interceptions against New England was like the end of the line for him?
I do. I think it was a lot of things leading up. I think they probably had it in their mind that they were willing to at least move on for a while, but weren't necessarily eager to do that. I think they wanted it to work out with Zay. I really do.
Sure.
They wanted him to be who they thought
pick,
he was. That's
right.
That's their investment, second round pick. Yep. You don't want to trade the guy, especially for a fifth rounder. But I think at the end of the day, they had to do what was best. And that was already trending that way, Bulldog. And then when those plays happened, I think it became apparent. In fact, last week, if Devin Singletary's active, I don't know if Zay Jones is.
Right.
I was thinking about it. I'm like, well, geez, if Singletary's active, I'm looking at the list, like, who would they have taken out? It probably has to be an offensive player, and I think it would have been Zay Jones. He played one snap.
Right.
So it was already probably decided before then.
I wonder what they do. We spent so much time already on running back, but with Perry being added to the roster and working on special teams,
mm-hmm.
like whether they go one receiver fewer and like Croft is back, so there's another tight end.
Yep.
So they're going to have to make a decision there. I wonder if, you know, how meaningful it is that Perry is even here. Like, does he go on the roster because he's going to play special teams or no?
He's probably an inactive guy, probably an inactive guy who plays in a pinch, but he does offer special teams value. And they haven't been great on special teams.
Right.
So that could be a reason they picked him up and said, we got to help out our special teams. Maybe they feel in a certain game where it's going to be I would guarantee you Sean McDermott would think in a certain game, maybe a game like New England, if they were to play him again. Low scoring, field position game. That's the kind of game you might see Sonoris Perry in, where we got to have everything we can to do to make sure we're not giving up extra yards in the
right.
special teams game. And some people may think that that's naive and stupid and it's only a few plays. I get it, but that's how they construct their roster.
By the way, I wouldn't be surprised to see Zay Jones get 10 targets-ish for Oakland this week. They're down Tyra Williams and they're at mm-hmm. Green Bay. I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. You know, they traded for him. It's,
yep.
You know, he's on the team. Let's go. Let's talk about the Dolphins.
Okay.
What hasn't been said, you know? Like, we're hearing about worst team of all time kind of stuff. And there's the philosophy behind it that we've talked about for different reasons many, many times over the years. And then also just like what it's like to play on this team, you know, or to even play against them. I wonder just how different this game will be, you know, than most games. I mean, you always have a worst team in the league, Sal, but the worst team in the league is almost never described like this team is described.
And for good reason. They are on pace to shatter the all-time point differential, negative point differential. They already have over 130 or 140. The record is 280. They're on pace for 440 points against, like differential. I'm sorry, point differential. Mm-hmm. For good reason, we talk about them that
yeah,
way.
Yeah, it is 180. Yeah.
And that's with a 1-point loss.
No, excuse me, 138.
138 with a 1-point.
They've given up 180 points. Their differential's 138.
Sorry. It's amazing. And the record's only 280, I think, something like that, right? It's crazy. So I think, Mike, that what hasn't been talked about, to answer your question about this team, is we know they've traded guys. We know guys have gone public. They've said they don't want to do this. They've gotten guys out of there. They've either traded guys with salary or they've traded guys who seem like they didn't want to be there or whatever. It seems to me that they've intentionally now constructed their roster not only with guys that they don't really care if they're good or not, but guys who are just happy to be in the league or are not going to complain about it. I mean, if a guy says, I want out of here, like, okay, we don't want somebody complaining and we don't care if we lose. Right. So you can be out of here too. And I think that's weird, man.
Yes.
I just think it's weird that they're doing that because they are the team. They have control. These guys have contracts. Laremy Tunsil had a contract. And who's the other guy? Kenny Stills had a contract. And who's the other one they traded?
Fitzpatrick. Minka Fitzpatrick.
Minka, thank you. And Minka Fitzpatrick had a contract, but especially Tunsil and Fitzpatrick. Two young players who can help you turn it around in a couple years.
Right.
You don't have to trade them. But you know what? They want it out, and we don't care if we lose, and I don't want anybody speaking up, so get out. It's weird to me.
Yeah, and it's relatively new to football.
Yes.
If not just flat out new, you know?
Mm-hmm.
When we were talking about the Sabres and tanking, it was said about football, it wouldn't happen in football for different reasons, including that the top pick of the draft it's a little bit different than in hockey or basketball, where there are fewer positions. In football, like the quarterback is its own thing, and then after that it can be a lot of different types of players, and what are your needs, you know? Like if the team with the number one pick has a young quarterback, like if it were this team or the Jets or somebody, they probably wouldn't take a quarterback at one. So in that sense, if you're Miami, you're just as well off drafting later because the guy you want, the top guy at your position, wouldn't have been drafted yet.
And there's a lot of differences between the two, right? Because you have that, but you have, I mean, in hockey, we know that there's pretty much can't miss prospects at the top mostly, right? That's not necessarily the case in football. There's also, in basketball, only two rounds, and really the second rounders don't matter ever. I mean, really, beyond the lottery, basketball picks pretty much don't matter. Guys in the NFL...
That's kind of hockey, too.
Yeah, that's right. A little bit. In the NFL, all seven rounds matter. Like, most of the league is actually made up of guys who weren't even drafted or drafted very late. That's really the way it is. So those draft picks matter, and I don't know if we're getting a... if they're getting it from basketball and they're seeing what these guys do, the power that the players have in basketball. But even Kenyon Drake now.
Mm-hmm.
And Kenyon Drake will welcome a trade. Of course he will.
No kidding, right?
Right.
So will Kenyon Drake's fantasy owners.
Exactly.
Who even cares if he does?
Right.
They want to trade him. They just will. They need his approval.
Right. Yeah. I mean, okay. It's just a bizarre situation. I don't like it. I understand what they're doing. I think it's hurtful to the game. I think it's hurtful to the players on that team and the organization overall. But they're following the rules, and they're going to get a great draft pick because of it.
Yeah, like Miami won 9 games last year, and they were in the playoffs 3 years ago with Ryan Tannehill, who they dismissed. 9 games. They were 9-7 last year. Remember we had a bet on them?
Yep.
And I won the bet, but I knew I was super lucky the whole time. The games they won, that Albert Wilson game against the Bears, and it was just like a lucky win.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not a team that won 5 games last year where, like, what are we doing? You know, that would be the hockey team that does this would be the hockey team that, you know, has 75 points or something and can't get out of the rut. These guys, I mean, they weren't good, but their record was pretty good. I wonder what role New England plays in their strategy. Because even if they were actually good, they were not going to topple New England. And so part of the equation is, well, we're not going to finish first. So it makes it that much easier, I think, to justify doing this.
Yeah, I think, Mike, that what really kind of perplexes me about this, though, is the point I brought up about Fitzpatrick and Tunsil you can actually turn around pretty quickly in the NFL. It doesn't have to be 1 year, but 2 years. Like, you could do that in this league with the right draft picks.
Those guys could have easily been part of a turnaround with a new quarterback. And
exactly.
Then, like, 2 years from now, I've got my left tackle. I've got my quarterback for the secondary.
But it seems to me they've stripped it so far that we're talking another year of this. And then they're probably only going to make a little step after that. Sure, they could go out and spend a ton of money and get a few players. And maybe Tua comes in and he lights it up. But even no matter how good he's going to be, next year, who's he throwing to? Who's blocking for him? All that. That's what gets me about what they did. We've seen teams, Indy, Cleveland, whatever. Cleveland went as far as I thought a team would go. This team went way farther. It's amazing.
Right. And Cleveland still hasn't really proven that it worked.
That's exactly right.
I mean, it might. They definitely have a lot of talent.
They have talent.
But... you know, I don't know. Is it going to come together for them?
And again, let's remember, the other difference is in the NFL, there are four-year rookie deals. That's not the same in the NHL. It's not the same in the NBA. You get a guy, he's gone in 5 years maybe. Like, you have to let him walk.
Yeah.
So if you're going to do this and commit to this, after 3 years, if you're not where you are, you're kind of replenishing what you already did anyway. So it's a weird dynamic there.
Well, the coaching facet of this will be really interesting, because I might argue that the Browns' problem right now is mostly coaching, because they definitely, I mean, they hit on the number of draft picks that they were supposed to, if not more than that number.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have a lot of good players, and plus Beckham, right? That's a trade. They have a lot of good players. So when you have a lot of good players, like, what's the point about the draft? The draft is, I mean, at least to a point, this is the point, that you need the talent and those guys to be good performers in the league, but the rest of it is development and usage and, you know, even culture, if you want.
Like, sure.
It's the coaching aspect
of it. Yeah, they didn't hire the right coach. I never thought they did. He was coaching four guys in a room a year ago. I mean, really, that's what he was doing. A year ago this time, he was coaching four guys in a room. And then he got elevated to offensive coordinator.
Kitchens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now he's a head coach. And
he might be outclassed.
Big time.
Right.
Yeah, he has way too much on his plate. He's not willing to give up what's on his plate. And I think it just came at him so fast that he didn't know what to do and how to do it. He doesn't have the right guys to lean on him around him for that situation as well. And I will say this, Mike, I think the mistake they made was the talent is one thing, but it was really all skill players. They did not build that offensive line. They have offensive line issues, and they have a young quarterback who's suffering because of it.
And they just traded a center that they picked with the first pick of the second round last year.
Right.
That he was traded the other day.
Right.
Yeah, they traded for Wyatt Teller, and, you know, I mean, they don't.
And they did that.
So again, I think they acquired talent, but they didn't necessarily build the roster the right way. There's a difference between the two.
Yes, Wyatt Teller. Haven't thought about that in a while. The Browns trading for him, and the Patriots also traded with the Bills in the preseason for Russell Bodine. And, you know, what does that look like? It looks like you're scrambling. It looks like the Rams are doing that now, too. But here's New England, whatever scrambling that was there. They're not perfect.
But they're still undefeated, right?
Their record is
And they
is
cut
perfect.
Bodine. They gave up, fifth-round pick, and he didn't even make the roster.
Or sixth, fifth yeah, or sixth.
They did. I don't know what this Miami team's going to look like on Sunday, but I am intrigued about Ryan Fitzpatrick and just him throwing the ball up for grabs and saying, maybe I can get two touchdowns here and we'll see what happens, right? I mean, that's what he's going to do.
Yeah,
he's going to throw it up.
There's been no time to throw. Rosen's numbers in that area are like 2.3 seconds or something before he gets hit. All right, Sal, nice being with you. I know you're off to All-High Stadium.
Yes, All-High tonight. Niagara Falls against Bennett. Should be a good high school football game. It'll be on Spectrum News tonight.
All right, good.
Thank you.
Thank you. More of the Roundtable next. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, then picks, which you just can't miss.
Mm.
Unless you're me picking, then you miss. This is WGR.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, one more prize giveaway for us this week. We got a pair of tickets to the Trans-Siberian Orchestra performance Saturday, December 14th, 8 p.m. Key Bank Center. Minimum value of this prize is $100. Comes courtesy of Metamorphic Concerts. General contest rules apply. You can get more info and buy your own tickets at tickets.com. But we got a pair right now for caller 5 at 644-9878.
Another injury update. DeSean Jackson out for the Eagles. He's been out a few weeks. The Eagles are here next week. As you may know, you follow the league, you pay attention to how the schedule works. The Bills play, every team plays teams from the other conference once every 4 years and in their own stadium once every 8 years. So I like that. I mean, I love the way the NFL schedule falls together. Like the Jaguars playing the Bengals this week. Used to be a pretty good, like a division rivalry. You had A.J. Green and Jalen Ramsey go at it once in a game. Funny enough, they play, the Bengals play the Rams next week. So if Green is, okay, I think that's next week. They play him coming up. If Green is back, you might still have that. Anyway, this will be the Eagles then next week, first visit since 2011. And that was a pretty cool game. The Bills won that game early in the season, about same time of year, maybe like week 4 or 5, beating Philadelphia. That's Michael Vick.
Bunch of turnovers, right?
Yep, and that's the game where we have the clip of the Eagles announcer, Merrill Reese is his name, right?
Uh-huh.
Just losing it over the Eagles jumping offside to give the Bills a first down that allowed for them to clinch the game.
Right.
But I like this one. It's one of the highlights of the schedule. If I were a ticket holder, Philadelphia at Buffalo would be one of my favorites.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the way the schedule is laid out here and the way Miami looks, and we just, you know, covered that extensively with Sal here in the last segment, you know, it's hard. You're conditioned as an NFL fan to never treat, you know, whatever, we're just fans. But you don't, like, take any opponent for granted for your team. Like, anything can happen in the week. I mean, it's just not. But Miami seems like they might be an exception to that. And the Eagles being the next game is, it's a little bit like it was when the Bills were playing the Bengals and New England was coming in. Like, okay, who's next? Like, when do I get a game that can really prove something? Because beating Miami, however you beat them, is not really going to enhance the Bills' standing within the league. I don't think it will really enhance their standing much within the community of Bills fans. It's going to be, for me, and I think a lot of people, okay, here come the Eagles. What can I do against that? They're a real team. They won the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. Can I do that at home? And like that could be, it's funny, from 1 week to the next, that could be a real, real important win if the Bills get it, that Eagle game, I think. It's pretty tasty.
So Vic, the quarterback, last time they were here, Donovan McNabb, the quarterback, I think, the 99, the Bills played the Eagles, and McNabb was the quarterback. He was a rookie, I think, when that happened. Anyway, Carson Wentz, first visit for him next week. All right, picks coming up, and those are great. Those are important. How do you live with yourselves? You don't pay attention to these. I don't know. Stay tuned. We'll have John Clayton also, right? That's what we're doing today. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. This is WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.